we're in a situation where we have put together, and you guys did it for our administration, the President Obama's administration before this. We have put together, I think, the most extensive and inclusive voter fraud organization in the history of American politics.
Welcome to the BCP podcast. I am James BCP. Big hug to all of y'all. Appreciate you being here. And what do we have from the enemy of the people known as the Fraudulent Bureau of Investigation? We have this latest news. Oh my goodness. FBI says Chinese hackers preparing to attack U.S. infrastructure. That was Reuters 16 hours ago. Oh, I guess we're supposed to forget that we just had an attack on our U.S. infrastructure.
There's some breaking news involving the Baltimore bridge collapse as the body of a fourth construction worker has been recovered there in Baltimore, Maryland. I want to put up this live picture or this picture of some video of this Francis Scott Key Bridge that we are following very, very closely as the Key Bridge Response Unified Command said Monday that crews recovered the body of a fourth missing construction worker who died when the bridge collapsed in March. The Unified Command salvage teams found one of the missing construction vehicles and notified Maryland State Police. Troopers, the FBI, and Maryland Transportation Authority police responded and found the worker's body inside the car. Officials said the body was identified on Monday, and in accordance with the wishes of the family of the worker, officials did not release his name. Of course, the Key Bridge collapsed on March the 26th after a cargo ship struck its supports. Eight construction workers who were on the bridge at the time fell into the Patapsco River. Two workers recovered. Their crews recovered two bodies the day after the collapse. Dive teams recovered a third body on April the 5th. And new information coming in here on the 15th that a fourth body was recovered there of one of those missing construction workers tragically killed early in the morning there when it collapsed back in March.
So another body recovered, but we're just now finding about it here in the last day or so. Out of respect for the family. What about respect for America and our common sense, our logic? We have the FBI fear-mongering. But here's the thing. So it's being reported that the FBI is part of this investigation, which probably means just a cover-up of what really happened on that bridge back on March 26th. Our infrastructure is under attack, has been under attack. And, of course, we're supposed to believe it's just a foreign boogeyman that's doing this with no coordination or help from treasonous, traitorous rat bastards from within. So let's get into this latest report coming out courtesy of Reuters and the Fraudulent Bureau of Investigation saying that these Chinese hackers are preparing to attack the U.S. infrastructure. They have burrowed into U.S. critical infrastructure and are waiting for just the right moment to deal a devastating blow. This came from FBI Director Christopher Wray yesterday. You mean, I would say the right moment to deal a devastating blow would be as we get closer to the elections, because if they attack the U.S. infrastructure and we can't get out to vote or our power goes out, then they can suspend the elections. I'm not saying this is going to happen. I'm saying this is one of the many possible scenarios. They cannot win. Joe Biden cannot win in 2024. They can steal the election again, but it would be so obvious. I really believe the play is not have any elections. In 2020, they used the cover of COVID to steal the election. In 2024, I think they just want to eradicate it altogether. And perhaps, just maybe, the Francis Scott Key Bridge incident was a dry run, a precursor. It was, I don't know, getting us prepared, perhaps. I don't know why they did it so early, but I think this is going to possibly be the first of many incidents. But I think a good chance that a black swan event will be multiple infrastructure attacks at the same time. Once again, I think it'd be closer to election day so they can suspend the election. The report goes on to say that an ongoing Chinese hacking campaign known as Vault Typhoon has successfully gained access to numerous American companies in telecom, energy, water, and other critical sectors, with 23 pipeline operators targeted, Ray said in a speech at Vanderbilt University. Well, let's break this down. Telecoms, well, if we can't communicate, that's definitely a way to stop our American way of life. Energy, well, if we don't have power, that would be devastating. Water, oh, I don't know, water's somewhat important. We're made up mostly of water, and we need that to survive. Can you imagine the havoc that would be wreaked in society? I mean, just a 24-hour power outage nationwide would result in billions of dollars of lost productivity. It would also scare the hell of a lot of people. A lot of people could not survive 24 hours of electricity. They don't have flashlights. They don't have any sort of preparation. They're totally dependent on everything electronically, from their Netflix and Amazon Prime to distract them from what's really going on and to entertain them. I'm not going to say that I don't watch Netflix movies every once in a while or use my Amazon Prime to watch documentaries or what have you. But we are definitely addicted to phones, electronics. That would be a devastating blow. By telecommunication, we'd be completely cut off. I mean, I don't know about you, but I no longer have carrier pigeons or rotary telephone. But in our family, we do have ham radio operators, so we wouldn't be completely cut off. But that would be pretty scary. What about an EMP? I've got to ask our family members that are ham radios how an EMP strike is going to affect their ham radio equipment. I don't know the answer to this, but I'm sure one of you do, and you can put it down below. I guess it probably depends on the equipment, right? That would be a devastating blow. We couldn't communicate. We'd have no electricity or gas. You know, it's getting warmer, so maybe that wouldn't be, and maybe natural gas, maybe that wouldn't be. We'd have to take cold showers if our water's running. Definitely, I don't want to be an alarmist, but definitely, I don't want to say cause for concern. I don't want to be a fear monger, but I believe that there's multiple ways that they're planning to have a black swan event. I don't think they're putting all of their eggs in one basket. I think it's a multi-pronged attack, and let's just blame China right now for this. Now, I'm not saying that China's not going to do it. What I'm saying is China has allies within the American deep state and within the American intelligence community. China is developing the ability to physically wreak havoc on our critical infrastructure at a time of its choosing, Ray said at the 2024 Vanderbilt Summit on Modern Conflict and Emerging Threats. Is this preemptive programming? We know that the Obama-produced movie came out on Netflix about the end of American society and war. There's a new movie called Civil War. I haven't seen it yet. I'm probably going to see it today or over the weekend. Is this all programming? Are these all... Now look, if you're not familiar, part of the code of these satanic, demonic warmongers and enemies of humanity in America, in DC, and through different globalist organizations, is they have this weird code where they actually have to tell us what they're going to do. That way, when it happens, it's our fault for not paying attention. It's part of their weird cult code. Is this part of the code of letting us know what's going to happen so that they, in their code, can satisfy the fact that they've actually done a soft disclosure of their plans? This is one of the ways that they are able to initiate and then sustain with false evidence a false flag attack. So if China did or didn't do this cyber attack, it's being blamed on them, and they're putting evidence out there as proof that China is doing it, so that if and when they do the big thing, they can blame it on China doing that to deter America from defending Taiwan. In conclusion, the article says, Ray said China's hackers operated a series of botnets, constellations of compromised personal computers and servers around the globe to conceal their malicious cyber activities. Private sector American technology and cybersecurity companies previously attributed Volt Typhoon to China, including reports by security researchers from Microsoft and Google. And of course, if Microsoft and Google said it, then we must trust them. And if FBI Director Christopher Wray and the deep state Americans said this, then we must trust them over China. Oh, but we can't trust China either. So where is the blame to who actually to blame? Well, I don't know, but my money is on the American deep state blaming China and probably elements of China in cooperation with this as well, because we can't trust either one of them, but both of them are threats. Now, I do want to take a second here to talk about my trip, because some of you have had questions about it. Let me be transparent about what's going on here. Some people have gotten the wrong idea. I've been called a person who's escaping the United States, a man who, from the Watchtower, that is selling out or what have you. Let me just back up a moment. First of all, I'm a private citizen of the United States of America. I am not an elected official. I am not an official spokesperson for you, nor for conservatives, nor for black conservatives, nor for anybody. I selfishly represent myself. And as a selfish American, I love America and I want America to be strong. I'm an American citizen and I am here for America. I'm not escaping to somewhere else. Now, I've had a goal to hit 50 countries, to visit 50 countries before I turn 50. I am 49 years old. I will be 50 this summer. And because of COVID and other things, I was way behind in my goal. And as I approximate being 50 years old, I love keeping goals. I'm a very goal-oriented person, and I will move hell and high water to reach my goal. Now, with what's going on in the world, I believe that we are at the foot of World War III. We're going to get into here in just a moment into the latest in Iran and Israel. We have the war drums beating. We have China probably imminently going to attack Taiwan. The landscape to travel the world and see other countries may shift drastically very soon. And I got to a point where I was going to take my entire family on this Caribbean vacation, and it didn't happen, but I had the money set aside. I'm obviously not on YouTube. I'm doing this show. I'm working on two other business projects that are going to be taking a lot of my time and efforts in the next few, let's say later this summer. And don't worry, that has nothing to do with this. That'll be in addition to this. This show will continue to go on. But I was at a crossroads where I was like, you know, it's either now or never. It's either now or never that I see China for myself, that I see Taiwan for myself, that I meet this goal of seeing countries that I hadn't seen over in Europe and the Middle East and Africa and Asia, because things may change in the near future. They may not, but they may. And I don't want to be a woulda, shoulda, coulda. So I just kind of used that money. I was going to do this other vacation for my whole family. It was just impossible to do. It was like herding cats. My parents had one thing going on. My daughter, who's recently married and then graduated and started a new job and her career going on. And her husband landed this fantastic internship. And then my two younger kids, I wanted to do it before they went on their 2 year and 18 month respectively, my son and daughter, church mission. So it just didn't work out, but the funds were there and it was now or never. So the missus and I just went and we hit as many countries as we could over the last almost, 7 weeks, almost 2 months. Well, not quite. And for those who want to know, I'm at 45 of 50. I've got 5 countries to go in the next couple months and I'm going to hit it. And would you believe that one of those 50 countries is not Canada? Now, actually, I've been to Canada. I went as a child to Niagara, but one of the criteria I have for my goal is I have to remember it. It can't be like when I was like in my mother's womb or like 5 years old. I've seen pictures of it. And I vaguely remember going to Niagara Falls and then going to the Canadian side. But I don't count Canada because I haven't done it and experienced it as at least a pre-teenager or a teenager or an adult. So of the 45 countries I have, Canada's not one of them. It probably will be in the next several weeks so I can get closer to my 50. So that's why we went. And that's why we went for an extended amount of time. And I'm going to do a separate video about the country, some of the countries I visited and some of the things I've learned. But let me tell you really quick about China. I'll get more into that when I make that other video. But China is as bad as they say as far as being a police state. Everywhere we went, there was multiple cameras recording us. I was fingerprinted and my picture taken and my passport scanned. I can't tell you how many times. I mean, I was just there for 3 days. I wasn't there very long. It literally was in and out because I got the wife and I got a visas on arrival, it was a transit visa. So it was only good if you came into China and were leaving to somewhere else, not to back to where you came from. So this transit visa was only good for 72 to 144 hours. And I wanted to go to Taiwan and then over to Seoul, Korea or Japan and then go back to Shanghai. But things got complicated. And for our safety and for our security, we didn't, just to make it easier, we spent the extra money and we had a private driver and a private guide for our time in Beijing and to the Great Wall and to Tiananmen Square and all that kind of stuff. The Chinese people are absolutely wonderful people. I actually want to go back to China because when I have beef with a country, it's because of the government, not because of the people. The Chinese people were magnificent. They were very curious in some parts where we were because they don't see a lot of black people. Obviously, in Beijing, there are some foreigners. There's quite, not quite a few foreigners, but foreigners aren't totally uncommon. I did see one or two other black men, and I saw more black women, interestingly enough. But people were curious and wanted to see my hair and take pictures with me and talk to me, and that was cool. But I'm not going to show for China. Total police state. And not just me as a foreigner, everywhere you went that was anywhere kind of official, like Tiananmen Square or to the Forbidden City, everyone had to have their stuff. But as a foreigner, they had to look, they scanned our passports and looked at it and took our pictures, and my fingerprints were taken several times. And even leaving the country, the missus and I went through two security checks. Now, I am sad that I didn't end up going to Taipei like I wanted to. It just didn't work out with the transit visa. And then I didn't want to get stuck in Asia. I still had some countries I wanted to visit back in Europe. And also I hit a couple bucket list things as well. I went and saw the pyramids of Giza. So that's what that's all about. It was a personal goal. I'm not leaving the United States. But at the same time, there's certain things I wanted to see for myself and see if they're true. And also, I want to see what's really going on in other places. And once again, I'll make a separate video about that, but kind of just wanted to address that since we're talking about China and we're talking about Black Swan events and we're talking about the timing. So I've got 5 countries to go and I will knock those out in the next few months. But once again, it's not going to take me very long. Hopefully I'm going to make it so you won't even notice that I'm gone. I'll take my backdrop with me and make videos and what have you. But this last one I did, it just... We had some these gaps, and then sometimes we were like literally in a country. Let's say on a Monday we'd land at night, we'd go to bed, we'd have that whole day to see that country and city, and then we'd fly out that next night or maybe the next morning. And it was just, that's why there was these large gaps of not me producing the show. But I had to get this goal done. And if we end up having, and I pray that I'm totally wrong, I've never wanted to be more wrong in my life than I am right now about my nervousness for a new world conflict or a black swan event. I pray to God every single day that I am wrong about this and that the hand of providence will thwart the evil machinations of these people in power throughout the world. Now, one of the things they do want is war. They love war. So let's get into the latest with Israel and Iran, with Israel retaliating against Iran, and then immediately us getting misinformation and us getting out of DC and the Biden regime a push for escalating the conflict between Israel and Iran.
We begin with breaking news in the Middle East, where Israel has reportedly began retaliatory strikes against Iran.
The strikes allegedly hit sites in Iran and explosions heard possibly in Syria and Iraq.
We know U.S. officials are telling Fox News that Israel did carry out a strike in Iran, but so far we still have limited details. We do know there were reports of explosions in the area of Isfahan in Iran. That's an area commonly associated with Iran's nuclear program. Still some mixed signals coming from the different nations in the Middle East. We're not hearing anything from Israel yet, and Iran is actually saying there has been no attack there, saying any explosions people might have heard were from their own missile defense system. So obviously some mixed signals. The U.S. officials, speaking to Fox News, also added that the U.S. was not involved in this strike. We've actually seen the U.S. and other allies kind of urging Israel not to escalate this and potentially create a wider conflict here.
Now, isn't that interesting that the United States is saying that the official position is that they do not want to escalate the situation? But let's delve a little bit deeper into what's actually happening here, because as this report from Fox 11 clearly states, there was an attack, but Israel was silent on it. It was the United States who came out and gave information and tried to distance themselves from it. Yet Israel had said nothing, and Iran had said nothing. Isn't that interesting? The U.S. was sure early and quick to get out there this story. It's almost as if they actually want to escalate a conflict. Over in Iran, they are reporting this broadcaster from Isfahan is showing, this is on social media, this is on Twitter, that they were not impacted, that the city is completely calm and people are going about their normal lives, and that there were, you know, things hurt in the sky and things were shot down. Now, I'm not saying we've got to believe Iranian television over this, but we have this from CNN. Iran targeted an aerial attack. And this is, here is CNN's breakdown from early this morning, Friday the 19th. Israel has carried out a strike inside Iran, a U.S. official told CNN, a move that threatens to further escalate regional conflict. The Israeli military has not commented. So Israel didn't comment anything. It was the United States telling CNN and the world that it was Israel that had carried out the strike. Iran hadn't said anything yet either. And then they had to come out and say that their air defenses intercepted three drones and that there were no reports of a missile attack. Multiple state-aligned news agencies reported that sites associated with Iran's nuclear program were completely secure. Now, folks, I don't know about you, but let's put this in this timeline. This appears to be the timeline. Something happened in Iran, and the U.S. officially came out and said, Israel did it. We had nothing to do with it. Israel hadn't commented on it, and Iran hadn't commented on it. Right out the gate, the U.S. deep state wanted to say that they didn't want a conflict to escalate as they escalated the conflict and heated things up by pointing the finger at Israel. Why would the U.S. do that? Now, it doesn't matter if you are a supporter of Israel or not. What's evident here, at least in my eyes, is that the U.S. really wants to escalate the conflict, not de-escalate it as they claim.
But, you know, this obviously comes after as a retaliatory strike just a few days, not even a week after Iran sent more than 300 drones to attack Israel. Of course, those were pretty much all shot down. So far, we have no information on any damage or anybody hurt in Iran from these strikes. Many people are hoping right now that this was sort of on purpose from Israel to strike back without escalating too much. But of course, we don't know if this is over for sure.
So what is this going to lead to? Who knows? But the Jerusalem Post, Israel strikes Iran, defense officials confirm. A senior U.S. official also confirmed the attack, stating, "We were not surprised." The Jerusalem Post also reporting that some Israeli officials were kind of surprised and were not aware why the U.S. came out and even confirmed that attack came from Israel in the first place. Warmongers are going to do what warmongers do. And also being reported by the Jerusalem Post, Israel official security and governmental sources told the Jerusalem Post Friday, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, Israel retaliated where they were attacked. So let's see what comes of this. All right, let me get into some good news. Remember Sidney Powell? I hope you haven't forgotten her and her fight for election integrity and fighting for getting the 2020 election back on track. Now, I love President Trump. For those of you watching this show on Locals, Spotify, Patreon, I'm wearing a Trump 2020 shirt, black and gold. Kind of gaudy, but it is a Friday. But I don't agree with everything that President Trump does. And once again, I don't know his strategies for everything. But his abandoning, I think, leaving out to dry Sidney Powell. I'm not talking about with this RICO case and Fannie Willis and all this stuff happening in Georgia. I'm talking about back in 2020. Kind of, I think he left her out to dry. She's not my, you know, kind of distancing himself from her. And once again, I'm sure there was a tactical reason for that. But I don't like how that was handled, quite honestly. But we got some good news in the Kraken lawyer front. Gateway Pundit reporting. Kraken lawyer Sidney Powell completely vindicated after Democrat judges dismiss disciplinary effort by State Bar of Texas. Dallas attorney Sidney Powell, known for her vigorous legal efforts to challenge the fraudulent 2020 election on behalf of President Donald Trump, has been fully vindicated by an appellate court decision. This is from Jim Hoft over at the Gateway Pundit. The 5th District of Texas Court of Appeals in Dallas, led by a 3-judge panel, all Democrats, concluded that the State Bar of Texas arguments were without merit. The Dallas Court of Appeals has affirmed the Texas State Court's dismissal of the Texas Bar's case against Powell. After 3 years of litigation, the Court of Appeals held the bar had no evidence Powell violated any disciplinary rule in filing 4 federal lawsuits in the aftermath of the 2020 election. Sidney Powell's Defending the Republic said in a statement. The State Bar of Texas Commission for Lawyer Discipline had filed a complaint against Powell, accusing her of violating several Texas disciplinary rules of professional conduct. These allegations stem from lawsuits Powell filed in late November 2020. Powell became the center of media attention in November 2020 for filing multiple lawsuits challenging the certification of election results in critical battleground states, famously vowing to release the Kraken in her crusade to expose the election fraud. Now, I've talked about this, and this has been something that's been going on as they, the different various state bars have been trying to disbar their members for bringing lawsuits. Once again, this is just lawfare by the legal profession. This is another form of censorship. This is another form of deplatforming, another form of going after people's livelihoods for exposing the election fraud of 2020. One of the biggest names in doing this on the legal front, of course, was Sidney Powell. Now, by the way, one of our family members here on this program is got a relationship with Sidney Powell. I would love to have Sidney Powell on the show, but because of what she's going through right now, she's not really doing interviews. But hopefully when all the smoke clears and President Trump is back in office and things aren't so harrowing, I'd love to have Sidney Powell on the show, even if she doesn't want to talk about the Kraken and all of this other things going on. She's got a lot of insights to lots of different things that we can pick her brain on. So for those of you who are rooting and praying for the show and all the good that we can do here on the BCP podcast, let's hope that we can have Sidney Powell on the show in the not too distant future. The State Bar of Texas contended that Powell's lawsuits were frivolous based on unfounded claims of widespread election fraud. Moreover, they allege that Powell knowingly attached altered evidence to her legal filings. Yeah, I love it how everything is baseless, right? That you've heard the saying, go big or go home. The left goes big, right? They go big. They say that there's unfounded, that there's no evidence of any kind of election or voter fraud. They go on to say that 2020 was the most secure and safest election in the history books, even though we have evidence of ballots coming in from Pennsylvania, even though we have non-existent pipes bursting and Ruby Freeman and her daughter on video taking out ballots and putting them through the machines, even though we had never seen this number of absentee ballots coming in without signature verification, even though all of these evidences, I would call them proof of fraud, that are unprecedented in the amount ever seen, they still double and triple down with the lie that this is the most secure and that there is absolutely no evidence of voter fraud or election fraud, that these are frivolous, unfounded claims. However, Powell refuted these allegations, arguing that the documents were provided by other counsel involved in the case and that any discrepancies were not a result of her direct actions. Powell argued that any discrepancies were inadvertent, attributing the errors to oversight under pressure. Her defense argued that these were honest mistakes made in the rush of massive legal filings. The appellate court meticulously reviewed the claims, evidence, and procedural history of the case. In particular, it scrutinized the Commission for Lawyers Discipline's handling and presentation of evidence in its summary judgment response. The court noted discrepancies and deficiencies in the commission's submission, including mislabeled exhibits and a lack of specific citations to evidence purported to support their claims. So isn't that just a doozy? Isn't that just interesting karma and hypocrisy that the bar was saying that the Texas bar trying to go after Sidney Powell saying that she made all these mistakes, but when these three-judge panel of Democrats looked at the filing made by said Texas bar against Sidney Powell, it was them that had mislabeled exhibits and had lacked specific citations in their evidence to support their claims. Once again, this is deep state tactic. Accuse your opponent of what you are guilty of. This is Saul Alinsky 101. Upon evaluation, the appellate court found no merit in the commission's argument that Powell knowingly filed frivolous lawsuits or made false statements related to the election litigation. It pointed out the absence of evidence proving that Powell had actual knowledge of the falsity of any statements made in her filings. Moreover, the court determined that the commission failed to meet its burden of proof regarding alleged disciplinary rule violations involving dishonesty, fraud, deceit, or misrepresentation. Justice Denise Garcia, writing for the court, emphasized the importance of presenting clear and specific evidence to support claims in disciplinary proceedings. Quote, "The bar employed a scattershot approach to the case, which left this court and the trial court with the task of sorting through the argument to determine what issues had actually been raised." Justice Garcia wrote for the unanimous panel, "Having done so, the absence of competent summary judgment compels her conclusion that the bar failed to meet its summary judgment burden." Well, Wednesday's ruling represents a vindication upon this matter. The battle is not over. And once again, she still has to deal with that Georgia RICO case with Fannie Willis, which for some odd reason hasn't been yet completely dismissed. And Fannie Willis's Fanny has not found herself under any sort of disciplinary action as she should be for the actual RICO case, which is her racketeering and mafia style trying to get President Trump and his people in legal trouble over non-crimes in a racketeering effort by the anti-racketeering Fannie Willis. Once again, baby, it's Saul Alinsky stuff. Blame your opponent for what you are guilty of. And the Texas bar was guilty of doing what they said that Sidney Powell had done. And they lied and were unclear, and they had a scattershot approach, and three Democrats actually told them to pound sand. Now I want to continue my Lawfare coverage. Let's go now to Judge Merchan and what's going on in New York in the case against President Trump and the ridiculousness we're seeing coming out of there. The search for impartial jurors continued on Thursday in the New York City Lawfare case of President Donald Trump in the courtroom of far-left Judge Juan Merchan. A fresh pool of 96 Manhattan residents entered the courtroom Earlier that day, a significant number of these potential jurors, 48 in total, that would be half exactly of 96, were immediately excused after admitting to biases against President Trump. An additional 9 were dismissed for undisclosed reason. Fox News reported that Trump-hating Judge Juan Merchan actually seated a juror who had been arrested in the 90s for destroying and vandalizing conservative political posters. Let me play you that clip.
That this has to do with something that very well could have been the fact that this juror may have been arrested back in the 1990s conducting some type of political vandalism against something, posters on the right, and it was not revealed, or he did not remember it and did not include it, and that is why that juror has been dismissed.
That's right. Hacktivist Judge Juan Merchan actually seating a juror that vandalizes opinions on the right that he does not agree with. And when it was discovered, luckily, he was one of the ones ousted. But this whole thing is a rigged case with no crime, and they're trying to stack the jury full of anti-Trump people and hoping that we don't catch on to what's going on. They really are hoping that we're none the wiser. But we see what you're up to. We see what you're up to, sneaky little bastards over in the deep state. And the deep state is at every level, folks. The federal level. And of course, they have their Hydra tentacles even down into New York City and other blue and otherwise red places throughout the nation. And what I mean by that, so you don't have to read between the lines, I'm talking about, for instance, what's going on in Georgia. Not just Fannie Willis, but the fact that we have Governor Kemp, who is anti-Trump and has given cover to what happened in Georgia. But even worse than that is Brad Raffensperger, the rat bastard over in Georgia, the Secretary of State that was part of the stealing of the election in Georgia and the cover-up operation. For those of you that don't want to read between the lines or need some specific examples of what I'm talking about, the Hydra tentacles of the deep state, these treasonous traitors, rat bastards. Now, people have a tendency, we tend to be pack animals, right? To think that our pack is good, our gang is good, our people are good, and the other side is bad. These tentacles of the Hydra, of the deep state, are not just on the Democrat side. They are solidly on the Rhino Republican side as well. Now, continuing my coverage of lawfare, let's look at what's going on in the a little bit more specifically on this Judge Juan Merchan trial. We now have the jurors. These are the people that are going to be deciding President Trump's case in this non-crime trial. And both Jesse Waters and the Daily Mail did a breakdown of what we know about these jurors. Let's look at some of the highlights, or some would call lowlights, of this situation. Let's look at the foreman. He is a male who lives in West Harlem, works in sales, has no children, and reads the Daily Mail. Juror number 2 is an investment banker, and he listens to the Michael Cohen podcast. That's right, the same Michael Cohen who is a tried and convicted perjurer, who has the chutzpah, who has the brass pair, who has the cojones to have a mea culpa podcast where he says he's reporting nothing but the truth. That's right. A convicted perjurer has the gonads to have a podcast called where the subtitle is Nothing But the Truth. And this juror is listening to this anti-Trumpster. And he's allowed to be sitting on the jury. Isn't that ridiculous? We've got juror number 5 who gets her news from Google and TikTok. Well, that's not biased at all. We've got juror number 8 who is retired and watches CNBC and the BBC. Jurors 9 and 10 claim that they don't follow the news very closely. And juror number 11 is a female who calls Trump selfish. And of course, that is definitely a sign that she is an impartial juror. This whole freaking thing is a farce. What are your thoughts? Throw it down below.
We're in a situation where we have put together And you guys did it for our administration, the President Obama's administration, before this. We have put together, I think, the most extensive and inclusive voter fraud organization in the history of American politics.